welcome to the seventh episode of the Crystal Clear Watchmaking Podcast. I'm your host, Luke, here with my co-host, Jay. And today, we're very excited for the topic, but first, how you doing, man?
Not bad. How are you?
I'm doing pretty well, and I've got some updates.
Yeah.
But before we do those updates, what watch are you wearing today, man?
It's just like any other Saturday, I'm wearing my Apple Watch because I just went for a run, so haven't taken it off yet.
Okay, so the love affair with your G-Shock is not over yet?
No, well, it's just, anytime I run, I'm wearing my Apple Watch because I need to track my run, you know, get like, the heart rate, GPS, all that stuff.
Gotcha. I think there are some G-Shocks with, like, fitness capabilities. Is that not one of them?
No, that's not one of them. But even if they do, there's nothing that's going to be as robust as something like an Apple Watch or a Fitbit, you know, or something like that. So that's what, and I'm like very anal about the accuracy of heart rate, so that's why I like to wear something that'll actually do a good job with it.
Okay, so do you want to give us your 1 week opinions on your Casioak?
Sure. I know it's the smallest G-Shock and the thinnest, and that's part of the reason why it's so popular, but my wrist is still pretty small for it. It still looks big on me. I mean, it's not as outrageous as the other G-Shocks. And I have worn other G-Shocks. It's just, it's still pretty big. Another corollary of that is that the strap, there's a lot of slack on the end. So it kind of pops out at the end, at the back there.
Okay.
And so I may change the strap on it, but it looks good with its stock strap. Like, it fits. I'm not using the smallest hole. It's just there's a lot of extra strap, and hopefully it just kind of folds away after wearing it for a while. But other than that, I love it. I always look at it when I'm wearing it. And so if I'm not during the week, I'll be wearing it to work and at home and stuff. So very nice. The one thing I do like about it, and this goes for any quartz, basically, is that you don't have to set it when you're after a lot, like that's very convenient when you have all these automatics that you can't, like, let's say you're running out of the house, you just can't throw in an automatic because it takes a minute or two to set it. So that part's nice.
Right. Yeah. When I looked at the Instagram, which by the way, we've been doing a lot of updates now.
Yeah.
We did 5 posts on Instagram in the last week. That's active as we've ever been.
Yeah.
So We're doing the social medias now, guys.
And we got to keep it up.
But yeah, when I saw your post there of the Casioak,
yeah,
my initial thought was, man, that looks big.
Yeah, it looks big. Yeah, like, I can't get an angle. The thing is, in real life, it doesn't look as big, but anytime I take a picture of a watch and wrist, they all just look big. So it is what it is.
Well, it might be because of the wide-angle lens, maybe.
It could, but I took it on my iPhone, and I was just using the normal lens. Like, there's a telephoto, a normal, and an ultra-wide, and I was just using the normal one.
Gotcha.
But, yeah, it could be wider than a normal, like, what, 35 or something, too, so.
Yeah, I don't know what the conversion rate for the iPhone lenses is exactly.
Yeah. And you might be right, they could be leaning more on the side of wide, just because a lot of people just want to fit more things in, so.
Yeah, and selfies, you can't hold it that far away from you and still take the picture.
Exactly, yeah. So, I like it, so I'm glad I got it, but.
That's what matters most.
Yeah. What are you wearing?
I'm wearing the Humism Dasein.
Nice.
Or however you pronounce it, I still don't know. And I've just been wearing this a lot, actually.
Yeah.
Like, I'd say 5 days out of the week, I've been wearing it. So it's fair to say that I'm really enjoying it. And we actually got in contact with the maker of these watches at some point. He contacted us just casually because we made a post about it. And we invited him on the show.
Right.
But he said he's a little nervous in live situations. But he'd answer some questions. So I gave him 3 hardball questions, and he actually answered all 3 for us. His answers are pretty darn long. He wrote me like an essay.
Right.
Very, like, this guy really cares about his products, I feel.
That's good.
But I'll do a little bit of a condensing.
Okay.
So my first question was about the concern that I had about the weight of the discs.
Right, right.
In comparison to like a seconds hand and stuff like that. And he didn't answer that directly as far as the wear and tear and all that sort of jazz. But he did give us some insight into the disc, which was interesting. Which is that he said that it's pretty much the hardest part of his prototyping.
Right.
Apparently, they were too heavy at the start. Yeah. And it was very hard to get them to be lighter. And they were just falling off of the pinions that they're friction fit to.
Right.
And that makes perfect sense. I guess when you move your hand, you can actually get some pretty fast acceleration over short distances. And I guess that would just cause really heavy hands like that to just slowly wiggle their way off.
Right.
But then he said that he found a Japanese disc supplier that made them 3 times lighter. And the other thing that they did was make them very well flat, because another problem that he was having was the people who were making discs before were making discs that weren't quite flat, and so they could be rubbing against each other.
Okay.
And he pointed out that because of that, you'd get rubbing a way huger percentage of the time than if they were hands, because if they were hands, they might only rub like once per hour as they pass by each other.
Yeah.
To me, I don't really care about that, though, because if the hands ever touch, it's unacceptable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right? But he did point that out. So we got to learn a little bit about the discs, which is kind of cool.
Yeah.
And then my other question was also pretty hardball. And my question was about the 6 hertz movement,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Because 8 hertz is not that unusual. You could get your hands on that for a mass-produced watch, and in my view, that would make it 33% more smooth.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, the ultimate for this watch, and it's like hypnotic dial, would be like a spring drive movement, right?
Yeah. But that would make it more expensive, though, no?
Oh, well, spring drive, Seiko's not going to give you a spring drive movement to put on your watch anyway.
Yeah.
But yes, it would make it way more expensive. So he said that he did a bit of a mock-up, like in a video file, between 6 beats per second and 8 beats per second. And his 8 beat per second movement that he was considering was the Miyota 9015,
mm-hmm.
Which he's saying is 3 times the cost of the Seiko NH35. And this one, I think, is more important, is that it's harder to get your hands on, apparently, these days. When the 9015 was first released, it was actually priced similar to the NH35, but the price really went up on them and they're harder to get their hands on, and so he decided to go with the NH35, which from a supply side, not being able to get your hands on it is a really big deal.
Yeah,
so I can understand that. He says that there's not really that much of a visual difference in the way that they look with the discs.
Yeah.
Me, I think that's not as strong of an argument.
Yeah.
Because obviously it's 33% more smooth, which is definitely noticeable.
Yeah.
But he explained those two things pretty well, and I liked his answers. And then the third thing that I asked him was kind of open-ended, which was, what is the thing that shouldn't be hard about starting up a business like he did, and just ended up being way, way harder than he imagined.
Mm-hmm.
And his answer for this was shipping.
Oh, so logistics.
Yeah, so he says, and I already knew this part, that they had a third-party fulfillment center.
Mm.
So they store and ship the watches, and that's based out of Hong Kong, and where you put your shipment center will change how much globally you pay on average, of course.
Yeah.
Hong Kong might have been a good place to put it. I don't know, with all the unrest there and them probably being folded into China into the near future, that sort of thing might change, actually.
Oh, for sure.
But he says the EU is getting stricter and stricter, and so customers from the EU that buy the watches get quote unquote crazy custom fees.
Yeah, but that's on a lot of stuff because EU protects its markets pretty strongly, no matter if it's watches, electronics. It's stuff just more expensive there.
Right. Now, he's saying maybe they'll get a shipping warehouse within Europe to fix that problem. But the U.S. has an $800 allowance, I guess, per
shipment.
I don't know if it's per shipment or if it's per, like, company. Like, if I bought three of them sequentially month by month, would that cause a problem? I don't know.
I think you, from what I know, I think it's just per shipment.
Just per shipment, yeah, okay.
But
he told us something pretty interesting here, which is, he says the craziest thing that has happened so far was that the warehouse burned down in January.
In Hong Kong?
And yeah, and he lost almost all of his stock in the fire.
Damn. I'd assume he has insurance.
Yeah, he says, still trying to get our insurance money back on that one.
Jeez.
Which is the worst thing about insurance, which is that you insure things, and then
they fight
the things that you insured how it happened within, and they still fight you every time.
Well, that's just insurance companies. I mean, that's how they make money.
Yeah, I find it pretty obnoxious.
Yeah.
Because there's no way that this guy didn't have that covered. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But that's just insurance companies are out there to screw you.
So, yeah. He gave us a big, long reply and really wanted to thank him. His name is David C. S-Z-E.
S-Z-E. Okay.
Just like my watch, I don't know how to pronounce his last name.
Well, thank you. That was nice of him to get into detail with all those answers.
Yeah, he seems like a pretty cool guy. And, you know, realistically, even though we are growing, I can tell you with our analytics, we're still a small podcast. So him really taking a lot of time out to answer was pretty cool.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Although, frankly, David, if you're listening, you wrote so much, man. If you just came on the podcast, it would have taken you the same amount of time.
Yeah, well, I mean, the door's open, right? If he ever wants to join.
Absolutely. Once we become the biggest watch podcast, he'll have to say yes.
It's only a matter of time.
So the other thing that I wanted to catch up on is the long and storied history of my wooden watch dial.
Oh, yeah. The journey continues.
It does continue. And I'm feeling David's struggles a little bit as a brand maker here.
Yeah.
I've tried all sorts of finishes. I've tried polyurethane, tried cyanoacrylate. I've tried spray paints.
Okay.
Like clear spray paints and like art. Like, you know, when you're done with like a charcoal drawing, you can like spray it with clear stuff to sort of like seal it in there.
Yeah.
So I've tried a bunch of different things, and I've just not been satisfied with them in one way or another, because I'm a real perfectionist, you know?
Yeah.
And if something doesn't turn out exactly the way I envision, absolutely perfectly, and then I wear it on my wrist every single time, I'm just going to be dissatisfied whenever I look down.
Yeah, you're just going to be thinking about it the whole time.
Right. So my current one right now, which is the finish that I think is probably going to work, we'll see. Is I'm using epoxy, kind of like how people do like bar tabletops.
Yeah.
With those deep epoxy layers. So I put a little layer of epoxy on it, and then I'm going to try sanding it down and stuff later. I think I might get there. Maybe next week I'll have something finished. That would be awesome.
That would be sweet.
So I've got a bit of watch news as well.
Okay.
And I shared this watch news with you a little bit earlier in the week, but MBNF released the Legacy Machine Thunderdome, which this is kind of a great name. It's called the Thunderdome. This is like Sunday, 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 the ultimate battle in the MBNF Thunderdome.
For some reason, it reminds me of Mad Max.
Yeah, it's just a really weird name for a watch, frankly.
Yeah.
So there's a few things that I noticed as soon as I looked at the watch. The first thing that I noticed is that it's extremely similar to the Flying T, which is a ladies' watch that we touched on on a previous episode, and the Flying T was released less than a year ago.
Right.
So my thought is kind of like, was maybe the Flying T like a bit of a prototype for this watch?
Huh.
They're really similar.
Maybe it took styling cues from it.
Yeah. Although they say that the Legacy Machine Thunderdome has been in production, like they've been working on it for years and years. So I feel like the relatedness of the two watches can't be just pure coincidence.
Yeah.
It
looks really crazy. It does look like a dome, so I can see why they call it Thunderdome.
Some of the cool things on the watchmaking side of things is that it's got a helical hairspring. So instead of having concentric circles of hairspring, you have circles stacked on top of each other vertically.
Okay.
Which is pretty darn crazy. It's one of the first things that I noticed when they zoomed in on it.
Right.
And then I was looking for the balance wheel, and it took me a second to realize that the balance wheel, instead of being like a disc, is actually like a hemispherical balance wheel.
Right.
Which is bananas.
That's crazy.
So this thing is pretty darn cool. The three axes that the tourbillon spins on spin at a rotational rate of 8 seconds, 12 seconds, and 20 seconds, respectively.
Yeah.
You know, normally we're used to 60-second tourbillons in like a standard luxury watch from Switzerland. So doing an 8-second rotation is actually quite fast.
So you say, so where is this watch? Is it French or what is this?
MB&F is also in Switzerland.
Oh, it's also Switzerland, okay.
Yeah, yeah. And it looks awesome. This is just another one of the watches that I bring up that neither one of us is ever going to own.
Speak for yourself.
All right, you're going to strike it rich. I like the optimism. But
how much is this watch?
I like these watches. I think this one's 200, but don't quote me on it. So yeah, that's all the watch news I got. You got any other things you'd like to bring up?
No, it's just going back to one of our old two podcasts ago, we were talking about eBay, and I was just trying to buy vintage watch on eBay a couple of days ago, but I got outbid, and I was really bummed out because now, a lot of times, there will be just that one vintage watch on eBay, and it doesn't crop up all the time, so you got to wait for it to come up again, and it's just sucks.
So I've got two questions for you. One is, what was the watch?
Okay. And now that you ask, let me send you the link. It was an older Seiko. And I'd actually just happened upon it by just going on eBay just to browse other watches. And then I saw this watch.
Oh, okay.
So this is the watch. And it comes up from time to time, but now it hasn't come up for a while. So I sent you the actual auction that I lost on.
Oh, okay, great. So I can really feel your pain very accurately.
Yeah. It's a really nice watch, though.
It reminds me a lot of the watch that you ended up returning.
Yeah, exactly. But it's like an older one.
Gotcha.
So I like that style, but again, you got to see it in person. So again, I haven't seen this in person, but it looks nice. It's smaller than that Recraft that I returned, so that's why I figured it might fit better and look better.
It's ridiculously old school.
Yeah.
And it looks like it's got a bit of a jangly bracelet.
Yeah.
It's the 1977 Seiko 5 Automatic Monaco 7019-5000 for people who like looking stuff up.
Have you seen this one before?
No, I haven't.
Okay.
Does it have any historical significance or anything that you know of, or you just like the look?
Not that I know of. I just like the look.
Gotcha.
One day I'll hopefully get it.
So yeah. My question for you is, on your bidding, when do you bid?
Well, I try to snipe. So I try to do it at the very end. But this guy was doing, I was going against this other guy. So I was the highest bidder for until 20 seconds left. And then he just started upping it. But then I started upping it. So we're just going back and forth with the seconds left. But it was just like a coin flip. I just ran out of time.
Gotcha.
You know,
so that to me is the only time to bid. Last 30 seconds is the only time with meaning.
Yeah.
The people who bid 2 days in advance of it closing or whatever, it's what is the actual point of doing that? There's no point.
But I could see, because a lot of times an auction will end with just one bid because no one cares. So a lot of people, I think, just shotgun bids, or just, you know, and then just hope to see what comes back, you know, just put the lowest bid in and hopefully maybe no one even looks at it. So
yeah, that could be a reasonable strategy, especially when things are like misspelled and stuff.
Yeah, and or it's just something that you don't really even care that if you get or not, then just put a bid out there.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, you made a reasonable argument for bidding before the last 30 seconds.
And the other thing is, you know, some, you might be busy at the time it's ending. So maybe you just put in a huge bid. Because they're not going to show, they're not going to put the maximum bid until someone else bids it up there, right? So.
Mm-hmm.
But
now, I'm looking at this related watch. I have no idea about this thing.
Yeah.
But it's kind of cool. A Boeing watch where it's got hours, hands, minute hands, and then the second hand is a plane that flies around the dial.
Yeah.
But it's like a floating plane, I guess.
I like how it's an American company assembled in China with Japanese movement.
But it actually looks pretty cool. I like this thing. $21, buy it now. That's pretty good.
It's cheap.
It is cheap. So you want to talk about today's topic?
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay, so today's topic is homages and replicas / fakes. Do you want to lead us off with some opinions?
Lots to get into there. Yeah, I think there's a wide range of opinions. First of all, I think fakes are bad. You're basically deceiving people when you're selling fakes to people and charging the price of a real thing. But then it gets into a gray area with homages and replicas.
Replica is usually used as a synonym for fake. It's just a nicer term.
Okay.
Homages is more what you're talking about, yeah.
Yeah, homages is when you're trying, you're not putting the company you're faking on the watch, right? Like you're like,
yeah, yeah.
Well, I don't know. It's kind of like a there's lots to discuss because I go back to the saying. What's the saying? The greatest form of flattery is imitation, right?
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of times when you're copying a watch, you must like the style of it because everyone's copying that style. One of my personal favorites is like the Nautilus, and a lot of people try and copy that now because everyone wants it. Or the Rolex, people copy that style. And of course Rolex is the number one faked watch, so there's that. But I think I would get something that doesn't say Rolex but looks like Rolex but is actually a good watch. But it obviously is a lot if they sold cheaper than a Rolex. I don't mind that. I just mind like fakes. I'm not for, but homages I'm for. If you're putting your own stamp name on it, but that's not a complete. So this is where it gets to gray area. It's not a complete ripoff. Then I'm okay with it. Like it just takes a styling lot of them cues.
A lot of them are like down to the millimeter, like pretty much just complete ripoffs.
But does
these are watches though.
But they don't say Rolex.
But they don't say Rolex.
All right. They just have some other brand.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's where it gets into a gray area because you're selling it. So that example that's down to the millimeter Rolex, but different brand, right?
Mm-hmm.
Whenever, if someone's buying it, they know it's not the Rolex brand. So
right.
It's differentiated in that way. And you can't sell it for the price of a Rolex. So, I mean, if someone wants to, obviously, Tudor is a cheaper Rolex, right? But it's not exactly the same as a Rolex. But people pay less to get something that looks like a Rolex, but has a different name on it, which is, you know, so.
I mean, here's my question. So, I mean, it's kind of unclear to me how the very strict to the original homages, like, aren't illegal.
I mean,
it's kind of weird, like, if I took the exact everything from an iPhone and then sold it and I called it the U-phone.
But people do that, though. That happens in the phone industry. Like, they literally take the exact design of an iPhone. But the thing is, it's not... Phones are a little different because you have software. So yeah, you can't have iOS on the fake iPhone. You just has got to be Android.
Right, and I guess these have different movements in them, so yeah, it's kind of similar in that way.
But the movements are like, you know, your normal Joe Blow might not be able to tell movement Rolex from movement B, whereas you're going to be able to know it's Android versus... But you have a good point. Maybe some people can't tell the difference between Android and iOS, so yeah.
So I guess for these homages, like, I'm wondering if those things like homages and like stealing almost everything about the iPhone and then releasing it, I wonder if this is just like something that we've been conditioned to accept because China's been doing it for like 30 years or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just like stealing literally everything about something and then re-releasing it with a different name or...
But the thing is, like I said, there's a gray area, right? Because there's got to be a point where you take styling cues, but it's not an exact copy, and that should be okay.
Right.
And then there's the other extreme where you just copy it down to the millimeter, like you say. But so I guess that's where lawyers get involved. And then you sue, you know, it's like in music. Hey, you stole my lyric, but it's a little different. But it's like, so someone's got to sift through everything and be like, how different is it and how close is it? Is it exact ripoff? Is it okay?
So I honestly feel with like 95% of homages, if you like took a little piece of tape and put them on top of the logo or whatever, and then you brought this pile of watches to a jury and said, pick out the Rolex,
mm-hmm.
they would have a really hard time accomplishing that task.
Yeah.
Which
I mean, yeah,
kind of shows that maybe they're too close if like nobody could do it unless they saw the brand name.
But you know what's interesting, and since we're talking about the phone industry, so China originally, when they first their early phone companies just copied iPhones because iPhone made you know that they're made in China, so people in the factories or whatever stole the designs, but because of that they flourished and they iterated on it, and now they have their own phone industry on the back of copy. Like they copied off Apple, but now they're doing their own thing. Now it's not copies anymore. Now it's original designs, but it's because they started copying Apple.
Right. Which is how it's always been with Chinese production in the modern age, basically.
Yeah. I mean, you could kind of
feels wrong to me.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and it is wrong. So, but the thing is, Apple keeps making their phones there, so they must have some money people saying it's still worth it.
Yeah, I mean, when your labor is so cheap that you have to like put nets under the windows of the factory so people can't commit suicide.
Yeah,
that's some pretty cheap labor, hard to give up, I guess.
Yeah, and the sad thing is, you're right, because the phone industry is huge. I mean, iPhone is what, maybe the number one best-selling product in the world, but watches aren't, and watchmakers are going to feel the burn of fake watches a lot more, and they're going to leave the profession because they're getting pushed out with cheap fakes. That's not good.
The number one product in the world has to be something more mundane, like diapers or food or like clothing or something.
I guess it depends how you define number one. Like, what are you talking about? Volume sold, profits, what?
Dollars per year or something? I don't know.
Yeah.
But Apple has a ridiculous... Didn't they have like $1 trillion or something in valuation or something like that at one point?
Yeah. And I think they have like the most cash of like any U.S. company like on hand.
Right. Yeah. They're doing insanely well for themselves.
Yeah. But I'm not sure about the financials of watch companies. Do you have any insight into that? Like, does Rolex does Rolex do well? I don't even know if Rolex is not a publicly traded company.
No, because Rolex is technically like a charity or something.
Yeah, they're private, so they could do what they want.
Yeah, like Hans Wilsdorf like didn't have kids or something like that, and he wanted the watch company to be like his legacy charity. Non-profit or something.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. To me, everyone's making too much money for it to really be a non-profit. It's kind of like the NFL.
Yeah.
The idea that the NFL is a non-profit is just total nonsense.
Yeah. But that's what happens when you're a big company and you've got lawyers and accountants. You can loophole everything. That's the kind of thing you get.
Yeah, like somehow everyone is making tens of millions of dollars nonprofit organization.
Yeah, I mean, right.
It's just like, what the hell?
Yeah.
So I feel like my problem with homages, and I guess I'll start off by saying that I'm against them to the level that I probably wouldn't buy one. I don't see myself buying one.
Okay, but would you buy a Tudor?
Yeah.
Okay.
But they're not as they were when they were first started, where they were just like same cases and worse movements, Rolexes. Now they have their own production and everything, so.
Okay, but remember, you said you still didn't like that, because remember I said the China phone company started out like that too?
Yeah, but Hans Wilsdorf started both of those companies. If Apple wanted to mid-brand Apple version.
Like a cheaper Apple.
Yeah. I'd have no problem with that.
Okay, yeah, that's true.
Like, there was no real theft going on of intellectual property or anything.
Yeah.
So my problem with them is kind of similar to my complaint about the saturation of divers, which is that there must be some creative energy being lost here. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
When you just copy something down to the millimeter, practically. Or I guess, do the owners of these companies even have any creative energy? I don't know. Well,
that's the thing. I think, okay, let's break it down. They must be into watches on some level if they're going to fake a watch.
Well, not fake. They're going to homage a watch.
Okay, so that's okay. So they're going to homage a watch, and so they must like watches at some level.
Yeah.
So I think it's like Tudor. Eventually, they start iterating, and it becomes their own. They make their own designs, hopefully, and then so you get a new company that has original designs, like, down the road. Because they're learning by copying, which is, that's not so good, but...
Yeah, I guess. I guess a lot of the microbrands that do this aren't old enough for us to have seen a transition yet.
Yeah.
Maybe. But there's a lot of them, as of now, that are still just have always done homages and are continuing to do them, I don't know.
So what would you
say? Just feels a little lame. I don't know.
What would you say, since you're a watchmaking guy? What would you say if an homage had better internals than the original? that's possible, right?
It's possible. I don't know that I've ever actually heard of it happening. But yeah, I mean, if you're doing iteration, because generally all these homage people, they get like a Seiko NH35 or, you know, whatever. They're not making the movement. They're just sourcing it from Seiko or Miyota or Eta or Sellita or any of these places. So it's kind of unusual to even consider the movement. But in my opinion, if you are making your own movement or making any significant portion of the movement,
yeah,
you can do whatever you want and I'll still have respect for you.
Okay, but so here's my thing, because it's like two different things, right? It's like there's the movement, which no one sees unless you take off the case, but there's also the
exhibition design. Case backs.
Exhibition case backs, right. But I'm talking about the front, like the dial.
Skeletonization.
Skeletonization. But like, what if you just copy?
I'm just being contrarian.
No, I know. But like, let's say like a Rolex, you copy the front, but you have no, let's say as a watchmaker, you have no interest in the dial design. You're all about the watchmaking. So you make a great watchmaking internal, but you just copy the outside of a Rolex.
Mm-hmm. Well, if you put an exhibition case back on there and maybe you had great finishing, because finishing on Rolexes is, it's not bad, but it is minimal. Mm-hmm. I would say. Yeah, I could see doing something like that. It just seems to have a little less soul when it's like, I just source the movement from X, and then I copy the case from Y, and I put my own brand on it. So yeah, it just doesn't feel great. Like, it's legal, and it's fine, and people can buy them, but there's pretty much nothing about them that gets me excited.
But you know what? Like, is Rolex hurting from fakes? You know, it's like
fake Rolex. They're definitely hurting from fakes.
Fakes have been around for how long, and how well is Rolex doing?
I think they'd be doing better without fakes in the equation.
It's like when people pirate a movie. Is the movie industry hurting?
Yes.
But because I've heard people say it this way. If someone bought a fake Rolex, okay. Rolex is people who buy Rolexes, right? And well, if someone buys
I love the discussion of fakes.
Okay.
But do you have anything else to say about homages before we transition over there?
No, but maybe I'll double back if I think of something.
Okay, I want to say one more thing and then I'll just dive into you, into okay. the fakes.
Okay.
The one last thing that I'd say about homages is I feel like if I was wearing a Rolex homage and then somebody's like, oh, is that a Rolex? And then you have to answer no.
But people say that for Tudor that all the time.
Kind of lame.
But people will say ask that about Tudor. They'll be like, why didn't you just get a Rolex?
I guess.
Right? And if someone is truly into watches, they would know the difference. I mean, maybe not with an off-brand homage, but with Tudor.
Yeah, there's a reasonable chance that if somebody says, oh, is that a Rolex? And then you say, no, it's a Tudor, that they'd be like, oh, yeah, that's still cool.
Yeah, yeah. Or they would know off the bat that it was a Tudor, you know, just by at a glance.
Yeah, yeah. So you're making your cases for fakes not hurting anyone.
Yeah. So, okay. So I've heard it explained like this. You have people who buy Rolexes, right?
Yeah.
So, and then you have people that buy fakes, obviously, right?
Yep.
Now, okay, so person A buys Rolexes, person B buys fake Rolexes, right?
Yeah.
Or it doesn't matter, singular Rolex, multiple Rolex. Is person B, would they have bought would they have bought the Rolex anyway? Like, did Rolex even lose the sale of person B by person B buying a fake?
Well, what I would say about that is in the description that you're making of these two watch purchasers,
mm-hmm.
both of them are making those purchases with knowledge.
Yeah.
But in reality, most fakes are bought without knowing that they're fakes.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying?
Okay, yeah. I guess I'm talking about those fake Rolexes that they sell, like, you know, like in New York, where people know they're fakes and they know they're buying a fake.
Well, you know, some people are very gullible. Some people might not even know that it's fake there.
Yeah.
I would say the majority of them are bought under circumstances where people are expecting that they're buying a real Rolex. In which case, they're paying similar to Rolex prices.
Yes,
so they would buy
true.
A real Rolex in that position.
Yeah. Okay, I guess there's a difference between a good fake and a bad fake. Because obviously there's bad fake Rolexes. Where the second hand doesn't even move the same as a real Rolex.
Right. I think if you talk to Rolex about it, they would say that all of the fakes are significantly worse than real Rolexes.
Yeah, but that's just not true because some fakes are better than other fakes.
Yeah, but even the best fake, because here's the thing. Here's what I want to say about fakes is that they sometimes now look shockingly good, shockingly accurate when you pick it up,
yeah.
You know. It's very, very, very hard to tell that it's not a real Rolex. You have to be pretty knowledgeable or get out that watchmaker's loop and look at it super close.
I've heard of fake Rolexes even like duping online like marketplaces that sell, you know, that have watchmakers in-house that verify the authenticity of someone selling their watch through them, you know?
Well, I feel like they would either have to be a bad retailer or a bad watchmaker to get duped.
You think
honestly.
So?
Yeah, definitely.
Because some fakes are really good.
They're getting really good for the public. But if you are a watchmaker and you're sitting on that desk and you get duped by a fake, that's kind of sad. This point, yeah. And they are doing stuff like faking the movements these days. But even then, they're not the same.
Okay.
I don't know. So, maybe you could dupe a guy who hasn't done it for long or something, but I mean, there's definitely a big difference. But what I would say is that when you're talking about these fakes, is that the most important part, and in fact, the only part that matters, is the point of sale. But after the point of sale, anything could happen. And the guy that you bought it from is just going to be in the wind. You're never going to get like servicing from them or anything like that. So they don't have to worry about any of those things. So let me give you an example. There's a guy that I know that owned a fake Rolex, and he knowingly owned it, okay?
So he knowingly bought it.
Yeah. So he's okay. One of these very rare consumers that is going in eyes wide open. And his brother was like in Egypt on a tour of duty. Mm-hmm. So he's military. And he said, "Oh man, they got fake everything here. What do you want, brother?" And so his brother brought him back a fake Rolex. And to me, it's not that awesome to buy the fake, but on the flip side, this guy that owns it does two things that I really appreciate. And the one thing that he does is when people compliment his watch, they don't even have to say the word Rolex. If they take into account his watch whatsoever, he calls it a fake Rolex right away. Right.
Okay.
So there's no confusion. He's not trying to pretend that it's a real Rolex or anything. So I actually really like that.
That's funny. Like, that's funny he would say that.
Yeah, it's unusual behavior. Most people, when they buy a fake, they won't correct people and say that it's fake.
It's but almost like he does. It's almost like he's proud of it, that someone thought it was real, and he's like, "No, this is fake."
No, he just finds it to be like a curiosity, like an interesting item.
Is he a watch guy?
He's not a watch guy.
Okay.
So I think that to me really helps alleviate a lot of the problems, in that it's not like a misrepresentation to other people.
Right.
But let me give you an example of something that happened to this guy. So he's taken off his Rolex after a few beers, mm-hmm. and he dropped it. Yeah. Okay. And when he dropped it, the crystal just shattered. Okay.
Yeah.
And the hands fell off of the dial.
Oh my God.
And so he was like, "Oh, Luke, I'm in need of your watchmaking services."
That's funny. See, the guys like him, I don't think hurt Rolex that much, because he went in without knowing it was a fake, didn't pay a Rolex price for it.
He didn't.
And he knows what he's getting into. So, and he wouldn't. He's not a potential Rolex customer.
He's not. And the thing that I find to be most important about him is the fact that he doesn't let other people think that it's a Rolex.
Mm-hmm.
So if someone inspects it and they say, "You know what? I wouldn't pay Rolex money for this." They're not inspecting it and coming to that conclusion under the pretense that it is a real Rolex.
Yes, yeah.
So because of the fact that he's a friend and he blatantly tells people that it's a fake every time that it's brought up in conversation, I decided to fix it for him.
Oh, nice.
So, put on a new sapphire crystal, got his indices back into the dial.
Well, I'm assuming the crystal that was on his original one wasn't sapphire.
It was sapphire.
It was? Wow, that's okay.
Yeah, it was. But it was interesting because I found that the one that I replaced it with was way more clear, like way more brilliant.
Well, it's probably better quality. Just because all sapphire is not equal.
Right, exactly. And that's one of those things that I wouldn't have noticed. Like, picking it up, I wouldn't say, "Oh, this sapphire isn't clear enough for me." You know, that's very hard to pick up on. But once I put a new one in there, I was like, "Holy crap, the difference is massive."
Hmm. He must have appreciated that.
Yeah, he likes the way it looks better now. But, you know, when I was doing it, there were all sorts of little things as I was repairing it that I had to take into account. So the first thing that I told him is, "I'll fix it, but if it comes out broken, like if I can't fix it, it's not my fault."
Yeah.
Like, if I accidentally throw it into a meat grinder, you can't get mad at me.
Yeah.
Like, because the fact of the matter is that a watchmaker will almost never intentionally fix a fake. Almost never.
Okay.
And the reason why is there's very few watchmakers that have parts, the ability to order parts from Rolex, for example. And you'll notice during this episode we talk about Rolex a lot. That's just because they're the most faked and the most homaged. So we're just going to use them as the standard.
Yeah.
but it is very hard to be a watchmaker that can get parts from Rolex. And if you fix a fake Rolex, they will take away your parts account.
With genuine parts.
Yeah, you'll never be able to order parts from Rolex again.
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying. You could fix a fake Rolex, and if you're a watchmaker with access to Rolex parts, you could make it pretty much like a Frankenstein fake Rolex that's like pretty darn good fake.
You'd have to switch out the whole movement, because most of them don't copy the movement at all.
Right.
It's just like a Seiko movement or some like unmarked movement that was made somewhere in China or something. And the parts are not interchangeable between the ones that are faking the looks of the movement either. They're not that close.
Okay. So, just one little side note before you continue your story.
Yeah. Yeah.
Nowadays, with the technology, I've heard, I was doing some research on this, there's 3D printing now. And apparently you can like print some pretty, like obviously it's not going to be as good as the genuine parts, but you can print some pretty complicated parts like just with a 3D printer. Like they won't be metal.
I don't know how good it's gotten, but I would say probably not, because like when you 3D print stuff, you're using like metal powders and then you're applying heat in order to fuse like them.
Just solidify it, yeah.
Yeah. And the problem with that is that you never get as good of strength as a part that was just cast in one piece.
Yeah, yeah. That's true.
And 3D printing is good in low quantities.
Yeah.
But the people who are making these fakes usually make a lot of them.
Yeah.
So they're better to like try casting their own fakes.
Yeah.
But anyway, so the point is not only if you fake a Rolex will you lose your parts contract with Rolex, which is very hard to even have one. Right. And I guess we could talk about that a little bit, how you even hold on to one. But also other companies won't appreciate it. So if you fix a fake Rolex and word gets out, you could lose your contracts with parts for Breitling, Omega, whatever.
Right.
No company will look at you fixing a fake watch intentionally and say you can keep your parts account.
Yeah.
So it's a big deal for the watchmakers. So my friend, he couldn't even probably go to another watchmaker and get it fixed. They would just refuse to fix it. Now, of course, I'm just an extreme hobbyist or whatever, so I could do whatever I want.
Yeah.
And I'm never going to get a contract with Omega for parts anyway, or Rolex or whatever. I'm not even good enough, okay? You have to get like...
Don't sell yourself too short.
Oh, well, you have to go for a lot of these contracts and stuff. You have to go and take their training, and then they test you, and then they decide whether or not you're worthy to order parts.
That's crazy. I had no idea.
Yeah, it's really intense. And, you know, I'm just a hobbyist, and if I just took one of those tests here blind, I don't think I'd pass it. They're pretty hard.
Yeah, okay? You never know. I mean, you've done. If you're a hobbyist, you might know more than you think.
So anyway, this is really dangerous for watchmakers. They don't want to touch them.
Right.
So I only fix it because he's a friend, because it doesn't damage the watch industry too much, because he tells people it's a fake every single time. And I've seen other people talk to him and him call it a fake instantly. So I know that this is just what he does. So that's why I fixed it. But there can be other things. So like the hands could be glued on.
Okay. That wouldn't surprise me at all.
Yeah, so normally they're friction fit, but if your tolerances aren't good enough for friction fitting and it's a little bit loose, whatever, glue will do the job.
Yeah.
But if you're making a real watch that isn't a fake, you can't do that, because if it ever needs to be serviced, then the hands need to be removed so that the dial can be removed so that you can get access to the front of the movement.
Yeah, yeah.
So, like, for example, when I fixed his watch, I didn't even attempt to remove the hands. I kept the dial and hands attached to the movement the whole time.
Well, were they glued on? Could you tell?
I couldn't tell.
Okay.
But I didn't want to try it.
Right. You don't want to risk it.
Yeah, they're stacked on top of each other. And it would be kind of hard to tell, like, if, for example, the hour hand were glued on or not.
Yeah. Because if they were glued on and then you took it off, you'd have to glue it back on.
I'd have to try gluing it back on or something. I mean, it could get to be a real mess.
It could get to be a bit sticky, no pun intended.
Yeah. So just things like that. I mean, I didn't want to take apart the movement or do anything with that either. I literally just took all of the sapphire shards out that I that were accessible. So to my knowledge, there were none in there. Mm-hmm. And then I just put back on the indices and put on a new crystal and called it a day.
Yeah.
And that's the thing with the fakes, is that if someone buys one unknowingly, they actually will run into problems. Because they'll bring it to a watchmaker. Watchmaker will say, no way, Jose.
Yeah. And that's going to feel bad when you paid like 10 grand for that fake.
Yeah, exactly.
If you paid 10 grand for that fake.
And these fakes really cause a lot of mental anguish, honestly. Like, for example...
But the thing is, okay, before we go there, would someone buy a $10,000 fake? I know where to buy a $5 fake off the side of the street in Manhattan. But where is someone going to buy a $10,000 fake Rolex?
Well, I mean, the price that you pay for the fake is only proportional to how much the person believes that it's real.
I know, but
so
but
as
where,
long as somebody like, is being, you know, a dummy and buys it, there's no... Like, the $5 fake and the $10,000 fake could be the exact same watch.
That would not be good for the guy paying that much for it.
Yeah.
Because no AD is going to sell. I guess Craigslist, if you buy in the secondary market, it's just whatever. eBay, even.
Yeah. You have to beware. ADs, of course, always sell genuine products. That's not a concern.
Yeah, right.
For example, people, and pretty much any watchmaker that's been working for a period of time will have this sort of story. But like, you know, father dies in poverty. The one thing that he kept on him was his Rolex. And, you know, their son comes in and says, oh, you know, my old dad's Rolex is, you know, needs a bit of a tune-up. What can you do? And then you see, oh, it's a fake. And then you have to tell them that it's a fake. And people are crying. You know, it's like the last thing that their father owned that they gave them. And it's a fake Rolex.
Well, you know, on the plus side, the father, his whole life, thought it was a real Rolex. So he, you know, it's ignorance is bliss.
Yeah, I guess. But, yeah, I mean, I don't agree that if 100% of people buying fakes knew that they were fakes, that it would be okay. But vast majority of people that buy fakes don't know that they're fakes. That's the huge problem to me. And all those people are possible customers for Rolex because they're paying luxury prices.
Yeah, I feel sorry for those people who spent that much money on a fake Rolex. That's... Because at that point, you're ripping off people. When you sell a fake Rolex, I almost like you're still ripping off Rolex. Don't you know that part is true. But at least the guy's going in with eyes wide open.
Yeah, I mean, for the people who buy them knowingly, here's what I would say: is part of what they're doing is subsidizing the people who produce the watch that are selling it to people who are buying it unknowingly.
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying.
Yeah.
You can never really shake off the bad part of that, in my opinion.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, but you think there's some people, maybe like your friend who one day buys a real Rolex because he bought the fake Rolex and it got him into watches, you know, and then, you know, one day he just, you know, got a little more money and just got a real Rolex. But all because
he bought the fake Rolex. I've heard some people make this argument like, oh, I want to buy a sub.
Yeah,
but I don't want to buy it without trying one for a while, so I'll buy a fake and try it for a while until I wear it. I mean, it's just not a strong argument to me.
I've never heard someone say that. That's funny.
it's an argument that I hear people make. I don't know. I'm not really sold on it.
Yeah, I mean, and I'm sure not a lot of people are like that. But
yeah, these are all very like niche, you know, arguments that people make. I would say I'm extremely against them. I'm surprised that I ever fixed one.
Mm-hmm.
But he was kind of just this mythical customer who was like not trying to fool anyone. And, you know,
and he's your friend. So,
yeah. Well, if he wasn't my friend, I wouldn't know how he actually acted about the fake Rolex in real life.
Yeah, because I guess that played a part in you fixing it. So,
yeah. So, I mean, I have a hard time imagining myself ever fixing one again. Right.
Well, maybe you'll end up fixing the same one if he breaks it again.
I mean, it's such a hunk of junk. It wouldn't surprise me if it needed a fix again. But the thing is, I would not want to open the movement because just like how there's like, I mean, the dial can be glued to the movement too. That's another thing that happens all the time. Because why would you want to like manufacture the feet on the dial, which is like a little bit more tough, if you could just glue it on,
Yeah, you know? I mean, when you're dealing with face, you want to cut as many corners as you possibly can.
Yeah, so you get all sorts of crazy nonsense when you open up the watch, and that's another reason why I'm not hot on it, you know?
So, out of curiosity, what movement was it using?
I don't even know.
Oh, you don't know? Okay.
Well, normally a movement is like marked some way that you have an idea, you know? Like your rotor will say like Miyota made in Japan, whatever, whatever.
They're like an
This
off
one
the
was just,
shelf, yeah.
yeah, this one was just unmarked everywhere.
Interesting.
So it's probably,
Like super cheap.
yeah, it was just, When a company doesn't even want their name associated with the movement, that's not the best sign.
Huh, that's funny. So let me ask you this, since you've actually opened up a fake Rolex, for the viewers out there. What are would you do you know of any signs that people can look for right away that says this is fake?
When you're opening it?
Not when you're opening, just anything, looking at it, looking at the seconds hand moving. Like, are there any dead giveaways? I guess I just want to warn, like, if there's any warnings we can give viewers.
Well, I would love to give viewers warnings, but my concern is, I will, okay? I will, but I want to preface it by saying, you know how they say a little bit of knowledge is a dangerous thing? And my concern is that people will go out and they'll say, oh, I heard these one or two things. I'm ready to decide whether or not a Rolex is fake
Yeah,
or real. You
I'm an
know what I'm
expert
saying?
now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I
So
will
buyer
tell you.
beware. These are just our opinions.
Yeah, I will give you a couple of pieces of trivia. Don't use them to make watch purchases.
Okay.
Yeah, we did the episode. If you want to listen about buying real stuff, we did do the episode on authorized dealers, gray market, and eBay.
Yeah.
And I would point you that way. But in general, you have to buy the seller.
Yeah.
So on an authorized dealer, you know you're getting something real. On the gray market, you're very likely to get something real, but you need to pick a gray market seller that is well trusted and well known. And just don't buy Rolexes on eBay if I was to give the short version. What are the things that stick out the most? I would say one of the easiest ones to test is that there is a little Rolex crown that's actually lasered or whatever into the sapphire that is very hard to see unless you're looking for it. But at 6 o'clock, if you like move your Rolex in the light, you'll see a crown there, okay?
Like in the crystal, like etched into the crystal.
Etched into the crystal.
Okay. I didn't
And
even know
so,
that.
yeah, it's not something that they really talk about.
But I'm sure some fakes could fake that.
Exactly. So
Okay.
the fake
Yeah.
that I worked on actually had the crown there,
It's a good fake.
but in my opinion, it wasn't well machined. Like on a
Okay.
real Rolex, that crown is like perfectly symmetrical and nice.
Right.
And that one was a little bit more rough.
Amateurish.
Yeah, but if it's just absolutely absent, you're definitely not holding a real Rolex. Or you're holding a real Rolex whose crystal has been replaced with a generic crystal, which is not the best thing ever.
Right.
So I guess that could be one thing that you look for. And it's one of those smaller details that fakers might not care about too much because people aren't going to look for it, you know? So
Right.
it's one of those corners that they can cut. And then the other thing, is if you look at the Cyclops, the
Right.
printing is sometimes not that good on the date wheel, and the magnification isn't that strong.
Okay, so just for everyone's knowledge, the Cyclops we're talking about is that little lens that magnifies the date.
Right. And if
Okay.
you didn't know what a Cyclops is before this, definitely do not try to figure out if something is real or fake using this advice. But yeah, The printing there can be not that clear. And then if the Cyclops isn't made well enough, which is commonly the case, then you won't get as good of magnification.
Mm.
But, man, I would just say don't try to authenticate one yourself.
I remember when I was a kid. It's a
dangerous business.
When I was a kid, you know, and I wasn't really into watches probably as much as you, but the main thing that people were saying that was the differentiating factor between a real and fake Rolex was that the second hand was a smooth sweep. So right. If it was like,
which is just tick, nonsense. Tick, tick,
it's like, that's very obvious, right?
Yeah. If it's a quartz, I mean, Rolex made a quartz model, to my knowledge. It's called the Oyster Quartz.
Mm-hmm.
And it's actually an unusual quartz movement. It doesn't work the way that we described quartz movements working in our quartz versus mechanical episode.
Mm.
So it's kind of interesting. But yeah, if you do see an oyster quartz, that one's like never faked pretty much and is pretty awesome.
Huh, I didn't even know that.
Yeah, so it might be worth looking into. I mean, I've never heard of someone faking the oyster quartz. Then again, you never know what's out there, so always have caution. But
that'd be funny, someone wanting a fake quartz Rolex.
And end up with a real oyster quartz.
Yeah, yeah.
That would be the lottery. But yeah, you don't tend to see fakes with quartz movements that much anymore, I feel, because like the mass production of mechanical movements has gotten so cheap.
Yeah.
That it's a corner that you don't really need to cut that badly.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, there's so many.
I can buy a Chinese movement that's got a date wheel and automatic winding as just a regular dude for like $22.
Yeah.
So if you're getting it from the supply side, you could probably, if you're buying a bunch of them, you could probably get it for like $10, $12.
Yeah.
How much are you really saving over quartz at that point?
That's pretty crazy. You could get that.
Yeah. Especially when you're trying to sell it, your nonsense Rolex for like a few grand, you know? Do you really need to cut $5 out of the... Not really.
Okay. So that's the movement of a fake Rolex. But how do the fakers make the case so nice? Like, not nice, but as in like so close.
You know, I don't really have a lot of knowledge on case manufacturing, but I don't know. It's manufacturing cause... with like CNC machines. If you have a CNC machine, you can make so much. You put in the 3D model, and you know, I'm not an expert on CNC machines, but if you have a 3D model and a CNC machine, you should be able to get a lot of things accomplished.
Like just mill it out of like a block of steel.
Yeah, that's how cases and watch parts. Actually are usually made CNC machines milled out of a solid piece.
Yeah, that's pretty crazy.
Yeah, so I feel like technology has really allowed the fakers more opportunities.
Yeah, and this is just Rolex. Like, there's probably fake, like, you know, like Nautiluses on eBay going for like $80,000 that people are paying for them.
Yeah, I mean, that's scary stuff, but... Yeah, I mean, the fakers will just follow whatever is hot and moving in high volume type stuff, you know?
Yeah, yeah. No matter how much it costs.
Yeah, so if the crown is ever taken from the crown, if that makes sense, then, you know, fakers will follow.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, like, back in the day, before the quartz crisis, you know, Omega was to Rolex as Rolex is now to Omega. If you're following what I'm saying.
Oh, really? So Omega was bigger.
Yeah, Omega was the bigger boy. And so, you know, back then, fakers were probably faking Omegas.
More. Yeah, yeah.
And, yeah, I mean, fake goods, I'm a bit of a square in general. This is just a general fact about me. So I'm not big on, you know, pirating games or, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
All that sort of jazz. Because, you know, I think that, you know, the original people who work on something, they do deserve some compensation, you know.
For sure. Yeah. I mean,
like, I wouldn't be overly overjoyed if somebody took all of our podcasts as we uploaded them and made their own hosting service and then tried to steal listeners.
Yeah.
You know, it'd be like the same thing.
Yeah.
Fake, and we want all of our treasured listeners to stay right here with us.
Yes, yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's fake. Like, that sort of thing's illegal, pirating.
Yeah.
But you know, the sad thing is, I think fakes are going to get better with the technology that's available.
They're already getting kind of scary.
Yeah, and I think it's just, you know, it's going to get, they're just going to get even more scarier.
Yeah, I feel like... I feel like the things that will not be faked are brands that are, like, cool but not in fashion.
Yes, yeah. That, because, like you said, the fakers are going to go on what's hot.
Yeah. And then the people who are making stuff that is just so insanely technical that the difficulty bar is too high.
Yeah.
So, for example... the MBNF Thunderdome.
Yeah.
Not going to be faked anytime soon.
Because the audience buying that is going to know right away if it's a fake. And so, and what? How many people are actually going to buy that watch? Very few. And they're going to buy it like through, they're going to make sure it's real, the people who buy that.
Right. But I'm saying, I don't think that the fakers that exist could even produce a copy of the watch.
Yeah, exactly. We're not there yet.
Yeah, like, it's just way too hard. Like, helical hairspring and, you know,
yeah,
hemispherical balance wheels. And so, yeah, I guess the high-end stuff, the super high-end stuff, is unlikely to be fake just because it's still truly difficult to fake.
Yeah.
And that's maybe a thing that Rolex needs to consider. Like, Rolex doesn't innovate that much.
Right. Well, it's a watch. It's been around for how long? I mean... there's only so much you could do.
Well, you could say the same thing about the Thunderdome.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's still like mainspring in the barrel going through, you know, the gear train to the escapement.
It's got tourbillon.
Yeah, well, that's the escapement.
Yeah.
I mean, so, I don't know, maybe Rolex needs to actually, like, step up and do some cool new stuff. Because... the more cutting edge you are, the harder you are to fake. But they've been sitting around making samey looking Submariners for decades.
Yeah, but it's hard because the people who buy Rolex want Rolex. Like, the reason they buy Rolex is because it's still classic and vintage. Not vintage, but it's like the design is classic.
Right. It's like part of their brand identity.
Yeah.
Kind of like Panerai and just gigantic watches.
Yeah. I mean, and you never know what, like you said, Omega was the top dog before. If, you know, what if Rolex starts coming out with these wacky designs and they go under? You never know.
I feel like the crown has a lot of power.
That can change very quickly.
Yeah. I mean, another thing is, it's just, I mean, one of the big things to stop this, of course, would just be for China to actually care.
Yeah, you know. But that's asking a lot. I mean, that's not to slag on China, but that's one of their, like, core businesses, is to copy things.
Well, I think slagging on China is perfectly legitimate. I mean,
yeah,
they're not exactly the most ideal government ever to exist.
No.
But if they were like, oh, we're going to respect intellectual property, then I feel like 70% of the fakes on the market would be forced to stop existing.
Yeah, but you never know. Some place else or someone else might take their place.
Yeah, they just move to some other.
Yeah,
I don't know what other country is similar, but
yeah. But anyways, fakes are bad and illegal.
Yes. So, do you have any other questions or concerns about fakes?
No, but
or homages. You want to circle back there?
No, but I like. It's interesting you opened up a fake Rolex. I would like to see a side-by-side with, like, a really good fake Rolex and a real Rolex. Just to see, you know, and with, like, a magnifying glass, just to see the details that are, like, actually different.
Well, I considered doing that content for us, asking to borrow my friend's watch back and then getting the same watch from some dealer or something.
Mm-hmm.
But we don't have the connections right now. We don't have the connections for someone to just send us a Rolex.
We'll do a podcast on location, okay? We'll go to the dealer with the fake watch.
Well, I don't think ADs would let us do it either. They don't want a fake watch anywhere on the premises, right?
Yeah.
So I don't have to be like a gray market or something.
Yeah. Or get someone who has a real Rolex.
Yeah. The problem is that his watch was the, why am I blanking on it? It's the one with like the lightning seconds hand. It was discontinued. It's resistant to magnetic fields.
Oh, that one.
Yeah, why am I blanking on this?
Shoot, I know which one you're talking about too.
We're gonna look it up.
Okay. It's like the Gauss something.
Oh, the Milgauss.
The Milgauss. There you go.
Yeah. Why was that hard for my brain to give back to me? But yeah, it was a Milgauss, and you just don't see like Milgausses all over the place. So
yeah, and a fake one at that. That's crazy. That's good. He has good taste, I gotta say.
Well, his brother does, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah, if he picked it, yeah.
In conclusion, you're more on to homages than I am.
Yeah, I think I'm okay with... It's a gray area. There's a certain point where you're not copying every single thing, but it's just you're taking cues, and I think that's okay. It's like the evolution of design to me, almost.
Mm-hmm. I don't have anything against them, necessarily, except for my concern of, like... people coming up with new ideas.
Mm-hmm.
I'm always more excited by that.
Yeah.
But obviously they're legal and everything. No real concerns about that. And then there's fakes, which I'm coming down on universally bad.
Yeah.
But I'm going to say the official opinion of the podcast is bad all around.
Yeah.
Bad.
Yeah. Bad, bad, bad.
Okay. All right. Well, is there anything that you'd like the people to know?
Just keep listening, send us feedback. If there's any future topics you'd like us to talk about, how we're doing so far with, especially with our kind of like A and B schedule of 1 week is more watchmaking technical and the other next week is more general watch news topics.
Yeah. And this topic was actually a listener request.
Yeah, exactly. So
if you request something, there's a pretty decent chance that we're going to cover it.
Yeah.
At this point, we're 100% on following listener questions.
Yeah, we're one for one. So thank you to that listener. I don't know who it was, but...
it was a guy on Reddit. I don't remember his name exactly. Plus, I don't know if he'd actually want us to blast him because it was a private message.
Yeah, no, yeah. But if you're listening, thank you.
Yeah, of course, we've got the Instagram, Crystal Clear Watchmaking. We're actually posting... more than every other day now, so that's the frequency's going up, so we're doing that, and we'll see you next week as we continue to discuss gears, springs, oils, watches, brands, all things watches and watchmaking.
We'll see you next week.